This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning and welcome to 49ers. No, excuse me. Good morning and welcome to Coach's Meeting After Dark in the morning on a Thursday. Really, when none of us would ever stream. It's that show that just rolls off your tongue. Grant Cohn, the coach, Jesse Naylor. I didn't get a chance to do the show with Jesse last night because my nephew graduated from middle school. Shout out to Sam Strauss, who's going to be starting at Bishop O'Dowd High School, where I went. Where the great Tariq Owens went. That's right. And I wasn't able to do the show with the coach last week, so I figured let's do like WrestleMania, except talking football, talking the 49ers. And thankfully, Bobby Turner gave us something to talk about. Christian McCaffrey didn't show up to OTAs, and people wanted to say, you know, it's no big deal. So they asked the running back coach about it, and he was like, you know what? That's the business side of the sport, and I don't get into that. Bobby, thank you very much. We're talking business now. What do you think Christian McCaffrey's business reason is for not being at OTAs? Whoever wants to go first can just jump
in. Go ahead, Coach. Go ahead.
I mean, you guys can take it. I mean, honestly, I can go, but his business reasons are is that he's seen the best that he probably has done in his career with leading the NFL in rushing and gone to the Super Bowl. Not only that, but he's got all of the utilization with having never coming off the field, gets all of the reps, and he sees it coming. He wants his last bag before things start turning a certain way. He also understands that the emergence of a $50 million quarterback means that something's got to shake on offense. There's not a lot of players that can be able to get paid what they're getting paid now. If and when Brock does get paid, which is leaning towards him getting paid. So really, he's being smart in understanding that we just lost the Super Bowl. I was one of the main reasons why we got there. I have all of the cachet and the leverage right now to make a move, and I'm getting ahead of the game right now when you're at your weakest because you know you got to repay Brandon Ayuk. And you know you got to do something about Debo. And you know that Juwan Jennings hasn't signed his tender yet. So right now, this is the best time for me to throw my bid in here with the strongest leverage that I have right now. And it's good business. I understand what he's doing.
Yeah, you're talking about a player who's a running back. First of all, we know the shelf life of running backs is much shorter than most positions in the NFL. Grant, you and I have talked about Christian McCaffrey and how the cliff he could fall off the cliff at any point from this age on. 28 years old, we've seen it with a lot of running backs. Some running backs are gifted and lucky enough to make it to 30 and be productive, but that is few and far between. Christian McCaffrey keeping himself in phenomenal shape the way he has, he might be one of those players that makes it there. However, he has zero money guaranteed left on his deal, yet he technically has a two-year agreement with the 49ers in place. He sees it as right now, the 49ers can cut me at any time. If I get injured tomorrow, I can get cut. I get no more money sent my way. And he's trying to avoid that, knowing that this is the final year or two he has of prime play. And he knows how much he means to this team. So it's you've got to get paid or you can be cut at any point. Looking at next year's crop of free agents and the way the team is going, it looks like the 49ers want that flexibility and he doesn't want to give it to him, which is smart on his end.
What's interesting to me about McCaffrey and not just him, but like the whole OTAs and the fact that a lot of guys on offense aren't showing up. It seems to me like on offense, especially so many players have sacrificed in a lot of ways, touches, targets, money. They've worked extra hard in the offseason. They all showed up to OTAs last year. Ayuk, Jennings, McCaffrey. And now each of those three is like, you know what? It's time for me to get the recognition I want. It seems like it. Like, let's see what you look like without me out there. Mm. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I did so much. I kept my mouth shut. We went to the Super Bowl. We put our we put our best foot forward and we lost. And now it's time for you to show me how much I mean to you. And it seemed like that's Ayuk's attitude. That's Jennings' attitude. It might be McCaffrey's attitude as well. And it's like, who's the most important person on this offense? Ayuk? No, it's me. And if he's going to get a rework deal, I want a rework deal. Because it's like, oh, you got Ricky Pearsall? What do you got behind me, huh?
Yeah. And what does the emergence of another receiver mean for me as a running back? Are you going to start downgrading what my contribution to this offense means, right? Yep. Are you really going to start gaslighting what I've done for this offense when the offense starts sputtering and then we start losing and then it's all going to be me getting the ball 25 times a game in many different ways? Like I said, it's from a team aspect, it couldn't have happened at a worse time. But from a player perspective, go for the jugular, man. This is, you know, if you got the leverage to do it, do it.
Pretty much.
No, Grant, I don't know if it's a separate topic or if we want to tackle this here, but as far as it being like, should the team acquiesce to Christian McCaffrey? Is that a separate topic or do we want to tackle that here?
No, let's talk about it right now. I think that's the same topic. What do you think the Niners should do here?
Yeah, I don't think they should acquiesce. I think that they should make him play out this deal. I mean, the 49ers are clearly in a transition phase after this season. That much is clear. We've got 29 unrestricted free agents. You've got Debo, who's under contract. You've got Hargrave that's under contract. You've got Christian, who are under contract, but all three of them could be on the chopping block at the end of this year as well. We already see the writing on the wall most likely is happening for Debo Samuel. The other two we're not sure of, but I think the 49ers need to maintain that flexibility. They're going to have to pivot and pivot very quickly at the end of the year. They cannot tie up more money into Christian McCaffrey, not knowing what he's going to look like. Giving him guaranteed money at the age of 29, 30 years old is not a smart business decision. Keep that flexibility. And if it pisses him off, it pisses him off. But he's also not going to just not show up. I don't see that being a part of his playbook here. Maybe now when it's not mandatory, great. But once training camp starts and all of that, Christian McCaffrey will be there. He will play and he will finish out the deal. As it stands, at least for this year, maybe next year he'll come to you and say, listen, I'm not going to show up unless I get this deal. But at this point, I don't see a reason to rework that deal. Keep that flexibility if you're the 49ers.
Tell me if this makes sense to you guys or has the ring of truth. Players understand that Brock Purdy is about to get a ton of money. He's going to be getting 15% of the salary cap. All of a sudden, now he's going to have much less money to work with. And people who are making money on this team right now or have high earning potential are a little nervous and wondering, do I have a future here? Right. Am I going to be here for 3-4 years with Brock? Or is this my last year here because they won't be able to afford me? I mean, how many people are thinking about that right now? Debo, Ayuk, Jennings, McCaffrey? Like, really, once they give $55 million to a quarterback, who's the first person you get rid of? The highly paid running back, the highly paid fullback. Yes, you can't pay all of it. So I can see why McCaffrey's like, no. I'm coming off the best season I've had in my career. You're going to pay me now. You're going to pay me now before you pay Brock and say, oops, sorry, no more money left. Like, no. You got it now. Give me the money.
I see it coming. Yeah. You know, he's coming off the best year that he's ever had. And he sees that they're trying to usher in this kid under his hard work, and then all of a sudden when it comes time for him to come in, it's going to be, oh, well, you know, we got Brock paid and things have reshifted. The economic landscape of how we do things, it's not the same anymore. You know, we got to go from the top down, from the quarterback out, and he's trying to get ahead of it. But then at the same time, the Niners cannot bend the knee. He's a running back that is given a lot of good reps. He's put in a lot of great positions for his skill set to shine. Christian McCaffrey just can't be given the ball. Like, there's a reason why he's thrived here. If you want to go somewhere else where they just stick the ball in your gut and let you really be the guy, take your ass back to Carolina.
Thank you.
And stay hurt. You know what I'm saying? So you need to also recognize where you're at as well. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, so one thing for it, I mean, you know, everybody has a point in this situation. And I feel like organizationally, it's time for the Niners to kind of stand firm with Christian and say, well, you know what? Case in point, character only matters when you're doing something you don't want to do, not what you want to do. So all of the times we kissed your butt and said that you were the greatest guy in the locker room, we also understood that this was the greatest situation that you've ever been in, and you were thrilled to be here. Now let's see that character play through when you're not about to get paid the money that you expect to get paid, and because we have things that are handling team business. So be a teammate. Show up to work. See you at work.
I think you're also starting to see why the 49ers drafted the way that they did. There's a lot of question marks, especially around the wide receivers, but let's throw Garrido into that mix. You look at
that's a good point,
Ayuk. Ayuk's on a bit of a holdout right now. You got Jennings, where there were some confusions. Did he sign the tender? Did he not sign the tender? Well, he had the IG post and he says year four loading and had a picture of the tender. So the assumption was he signed it, but he didn't. So now you've got the two wide receivers you drafted. They could take the place of them. You've got Christian McCaffrey, who's not here early. Well, Garrido's kind of your athletic guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield. And it's not necessarily that they're looking to replace them this year, but if something happens to them this year or they're not willing to play ball this year, they have the replacement ready to go. And really, for the future, there are staples of this offense they want in place. It's not so much about the player or the individual, but it's about the skill set and how do we fill that skill set going forward. They've done so in this draft. And the more that you're starting to see things play out during this brief period where they've got these OTAs, you're starting to see why they did what they did in the draft.
What a suboptimal way to start the offseason. I mean, last year, the way they lost in the NFC Championship game really galvanized them. Like, no, we're the best team in the league. We're all going to work a little bit harder, sacrifice a little bit this offseason, come to OTAs, except for Bosa, and prove it. And in their minds, they did. They're like the consensus number one team in the country all year. They got the number one seed. They went to the Super Bowl. They put their best foot forward and they still lost. And now I think there's just a little bit of like, well, are we really going to do that 2 years in a row? Like, we just climbed the mountain. We got to the top of the mountain. We didn't get to be champions. Like, you know what? Now this offseason is about resting and getting the money that I deferred. And it seems like it's not just McCaffrey. That's sort of the attitude with the team right now, which is not how you want to start off a Super Bowl campaign, in my opinion.
No.
It's like they all know they missed their shot last year. It's kind of the attitude they're giving off right now, except for Bosa and Purdy, who showed up.
Yeah, but see the Bosa thing is interesting because they shoulder tapped him and asked him to show up and be a leader, probably knowing a lot of these other guys weren't going to show up, which is, by the way, I know that we talk about Shanahan and his leadership style and all those things. What he did there is what good leaders will do, which is you've got a coalition of guys that you can trust, your captains, that you can go to and say, hey, be my eyes and ears when I'm not around. Let me know what the real pulse of this team is. Also, I need you to be a leader. I need you to be here. Can you do that? And when a player like Bosa says, yeah, sure, coach, I got you. Normally I wouldn't, obviously, but I'm there. That is a good sign. I will say that. But there's a clear reason why they asked him to be there. And now we know that he was asked to be there. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have shown up either. And I also find it interesting that some of these other veterans that haven't been in the league for a very long time, but are new to this team also didn't show up. That one's the one that really kind of surprises me. It's like, why wouldn't you want to
Chris Hubbard
get to know your teammates? Yeah.
Where are you? Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take a couple super chats. Official BNM Music 88 says BBL Coney and BBL Jesse.
Nice.
My niece said I looked like the white version of Drake yesterday, which hurt. Kind of hurt. Jewish guy says trade him back to the Panthers for first. Brother Bob says I'm back in business. Morning VIPs and chat all stars. Richie says now it seems like this draft was to replace players that want the bag next year, but the Niners are trying to find a way to pay Brock Purdy. I think so. I think we all came to that conclusion. Okay. I'm sort of in the same vein. The Niners happen to have a ton of players on 1 year deals or guys who will be free agents next year. It doesn't seem like that's a coincidence considering so much money is going to Brock Purdy next year, assuming everything goes according to plan. So how does this sort of last dance roster makeup, this sort of last push with this older core affect the locker room, team morale, There's a lot of, what do you call them? Mercenaries on this team. A lot of players who pretty much know they're not going to be here next year.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because I heard you and Ryan talk about this a couple weeks ago. And in the moment, I agreed with Ryan. I was like, wow, this is a good thing. You got a lot of players on one-year deals. They're going to be hungry. That mm-hmm. should make this team better. But the more that I sat back and thought about it, it actually just makes this team more selfish. Meaning, if you've got a bunch of guys on one-year deals that are trying to get paid somewhere else or get a big deal with the 49ers in this final year, yeah, they're going to play their butts off, which sounds great on the surface. But what you're not going to get is the unselfish play where it's like, you know what? It's okay. I'm fine getting 100 targets when I should be getting 130, or I'm fine letting Debo go off this game and me kind of just playing background musician here. No, all of these guys will start making business decisions knowing that it's their final year. Oh, I'm a little bit banged up. You know what? I'm going to sit this one out. Oh, I'm not getting the ball. Yeah, I'm going to start asking for the ball. Those are the things that can also start happening. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's not all good the way it seems like it could be on the surface. Like, oh, we got a bunch of guys on one-year deals. They're going to play really hard, right? Well, yeah, but they might do it in a selfish manner, and that's not exactly what you want. So for this year in the championship, right, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah, yep.
So for this year, it may or may not play out in their favor. What I will say is long-term, this is exactly what you want. You want the flexibility we talked about with Christian McCaffrey, so you can retool on the fly, rebuild on the fly, build around Brock Purdy and his strengths. So I like it long-term. I don't know that I like it as much short-term as I initially did when I heard the topic brought up between you and Ryan a couple weeks ago.
I like it. I like the fact that we're purging the team. Competition is what keep culture strong. It keeps a coaching staff strong, in my opinion. When you have a bunch of 1 year guys, you can't be a lazy coach. You can't just put out processes that guys are used to now, because now what you have to be doing is you have to be making sure that you get everything out of your 1 year guys, that they have one foot out of the door because they're trying to either get paid or put on an audition for the rest of the league. And you got to get the young guys under them ready to go. So it puts everybody on edge. You really get to see what the team is made of when you have this much transition. And on top of it, this is something where I'm glad it's also happening, because this is our comeuppance for us kicking the can on so many deals that went bad in the past. So now that we have these guys, it's time for our guys to either shape up or ship out. It's time for us to figure out who our new core is. We can't rely on the same core for all of this time, because they're just going to get older. This is just the facts, right? And we need to start transitioning guys out and figuring out what we have. And one of the best ways to figure out what your core is that's going to be able to keep up with you is to be able to have it in-house, right? If you get a bought, not built core, what happens is that you always come up just short. We're not necessarily one of the most serious franchises in the league. The franchises that are in the league where you're your Chiefs, you're the Bills, you're the Ravens, is these guys have guys that they develop, guys that kick the guys out, they move household names out because guys got ousted in. That's where Fred Warner came from. That's where Dre Greenlaw came from, right? These guys emerged and got rid of guys that we had to go buy to pace us through before our culture was able to get off of its infancy and move on with its own. Now we're in the transition period. I like the fact that we have these deals because, quite frankly, a lot of these guys need to move on anyway. We need to reshape the culture.
I agree with everything you said. It is completely a transition period, but I feel like it's kind of an awkward one, in the sense it's like you have the oldest team in the league. You have all these guys in their 30s. You're running it back one more time, but they all have like one foot out the door. Because like you said, you're trying to transition to a younger core, and the younger core is Brock. Like, who do you know for sure is going to be on this team in 2025? For sure. Brock.
That's true.
Bosa. Fred Warner.
Warner.
And then guys on rookie deals, but like not them. Like of the guys who are highly paid, who's for sure? Like you can't even say that about Ayuk.
Yeah, you can't even say that about Benny.
So it's like you don't know what the younger core is. And I think there's kind of a weird feeling on this team. Like, is this it? Is this my last year here? I don't really know. And it's like, if they start off 5-0 like last year, who cares? Everything's good. But if they lose week one to the Jets, this team may not be as tight and cohesive as it was last year. And we could see some stuff that we haven't seen from this locker room yet. Because again, how many of these people are certain they're going to be back next year? This could be their last stand.
Well, the Jets is going to be a very good litmus test, right? They're a team that feels as though they've been underplaying. Their coaches, they think way more of their coach than the rest of the league does. He's going to be coming home on a road game. This is the perfect game for them with Aaron Rodgers back to be able to prove that they are, in fact, the team that they built themselves to be. It was just the fact that they lost Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is coming back home to the West Coast to play in front of his people. They got a lot to play for. They have a lot to play for. So this is going to be a good game. In my opinion, just not to derail it, but just the Jets defense versus our offense is what I want to see. That's the game.
I would like to talk about this matchup in depth, but a little bit later in the show. So thank you for teasing it. But I think this matchup is really interesting. Most people around here have the Niners winning it, but I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I want to go ahead, Jesse. You have something to say.
Well, I want to bring this up as well. The optics of the 49ers, where they are this year versus where they were last year. And I know that you saw it because you retweeted it, but there was a secondary player for the Packers that basically came out and said, hey, we feel like we let the 49ers off the hook last year. And the reason that we have all of our players here at these non-mandatory OTAs is because we're on a mission this year. We believe we can win a Super Bowl, and that's what we're chasing. Watching that and listening to that it sounded and looked a lot like the 49ers last season, and it worked out really well for the 49ers. Yeah, they came up a little bit short, and that's frustrating, but all that work they'd put in really did get them to where they expected to be. The question is can you follow it up when you're coming off of a year where you made it so far again and fell short again? The Super Bowl hangover is real, and it starts with things like this. It's not just the one-year deals. It's not just guys looking for new deals that aren't there. It's also the health of the team. The team was relatively healthy last year, the healthiest it had been in the Shanahan era by a wide margin. This year, you're already starting off on the wrong foot. You've got Greenlaw, who's going to miss time. A lot of people didn't know, but George Kittle had a core surgery, much like Charvarius Ward. You've got Hufanga. Is he going to be the same? He already wasn't the best athlete and relied a lot on his instincts, and now he's coming off of a major injury. Is he going to look the same? The team is already starting out in a place, injury-wise, worse than what they were for a majority of last year. Can they hold up? That is also another big question.
Also, it's like a mental fatigue thing, too. They were talking about it. Kyle Shanahan said it the other day. Like, it feels like we just finished football. And I think a lot of these players are like before they were done in early January or mid-January. Now they were done in mid-February. And I think a lot of these players aren't ready to come back. It's like, this still hurts. I'm still kind of sick to my stomach. I'm still kind of banged up. Like, I'll catch up with you guys. And that's, again, another part of the Super Bowl hangover, why it's so real. And it's just human nature. It's hard to avoid it. All right, let me get a couple more supers and then we'll get to one more topic before we do our sleeper picks. Khalil Kemp says, not going to lie, 2024 is starting to feel a lot like 2014. That was Harbaugh's last year. They went 8-8. Jason says, you're commish for a day and can change one thing. What do y'all do? I'll make the whole league have the same bye week, week 8 halfway point.
I would say two bye weeks, whether they go to 18 games or not. Two bye weeks in a 17 game season makes a ton of sense. You have every single team play on a Thursday night coming off of a bye. That means your product's going to be better. The rest is going to be better. So I would change it to two bye weeks for every team.
I would take the field goal posts and bring them way closer together, like Arena League. Like, forget field goals. You can still kick them if you want, but you're probably not going to make it. So why don't you go for it? Who the hell wants to watch that? I think that would be dope. Just way narrower.
Every team's got to go for two. How about that?
Yeah, kick it if you want. I guess.
I mean, if I was commissioner for a day, I'd get rid of all protection on quarterbacks. Just get rid of it.
Just take it back to the 80s?
Yeah. No, like 90s.
90s? Pre-Tom Brady getting hit in the knee.
Yeah, right before that.
I'd be inclined to agree with Coach if Kyle hadn't pissed three first-round picks down the drain for a quarterback he only played for four games. Replace who with what?
That's so true.
All right, I got a question for you guys. So we're in OTAs. We're starting to see players who are going to be, you know, making a step this year. And it, in my experience, there's always a guy in his second year who takes a giant leap from whatever he was his first year. Like Kittle did it. Fred Warner did it. A lot of players do it. Who do you think will do it this year?
Moody. No, I'm just kidding. Definitely not Moody. No, I've talked about this player a ton. I talked about him all last training camp. I can't, until I see him fail, I'm going to believe in him. And the path has really opened up for him. If you look at the linebacking core, they're in flux. Outside of Fred Warner, they're in major flux. To me, it's Jalen Graham. I just feel like he has an opportunity to start. I don't know what Campbell is at this point. You know, the whole Devondre Campbell thing is interesting to me. A lot of people are really looking at what he said, and he's like, listen, I'm enjoying football again, and, you know, I wasn't in the right position with Green Bay, and now I know that I'm going to be used the proper way, and I'm very happy to be here. Go check his tweets. He said literally a year ago the exact same thing about the Green Bay Packers. This is the script for him. This is what he says. So I'm not necessarily fooled by the fact that, like, all of a sudden he's being put in this position that he wasn't put in with Green Bay, because not just moved. A year ago, he said the exact same thing. I don't know that he's going to be the starter, even though he's paid to be. He presumably will be. But if this team allows the competition the way that they always have and they just play the best players, Jalen Graham might find himself on the field very early on in the absence of Greenlaw. And the way that he's built, what he has in his past as far as being a safety converting to linebacker, I think he fits that mold perfectly. And I think, obviously, outside of Fred Warner, he can be one of the better coverage linebackers that this team has seen in a while. So,
good answer.
I think it's D Winners.
Okay.
Oh, look at you.
Okay.
Gosh. I didn't even plan this, but I think it's D Winners. I was hard on him first, but in some respects, I do take on the Kyle Shanahan way of evaluation, where I will have to break you down before I build you up. And most players that I end up liking are players that I did not think were as good as I thought they were before I laid eyes on them. And it's on the inverse for most players. If I see a guy where I just fall in love with them, I just think he's the best, he's got so much potential, he ends up falling apart on me and he's never what I thought he was anyway. And I feel the same exact way about D Winners. When I first saw him, he was a little pudgy. His body wasn't there. And I didn't really get it. I thought that he was a linebacker with, you know, good athleticism, but he just wasn't going to translate to the NFL game. I thought it was too big and too fast for him, pulse, and understanding that he was going to struggle with getting past what then was the strongest linebacking core in football with Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner. I thought he was just a novelty piece. However, he has really grown on me, right? He has really good ball skills. One thing about it is that I did see when he was at TCU is that his closing speed and his sideline to sideline pursuit is ridiculously fast. And that translated into the NFL. I've seen how fast he moves on the field. He pops off the film, right? He can move. But one thing that I like about him is that he is conscientious to be able to get tackles for loss. He's really heady when he gets his eyes around and pass protection. I mean, in pass defense. I think that that's one of, I mean, just to, I'm going against Jesse and the guy that I think will emerge, but in the same way, we both agree that the Devondre Campbell situation is not viable, right? So we both agree that there are two different players under this guy that we feel as though that are poised to be able to push and get him out of here. But I'll say this, we'll be proven right or wrong very soon, because if these two guys can't push Devondre Campbell off the field, then we got a bigger issue.
Or Demetrius Flanagan fouls. Okay, I got another player, and this guy plays offense. And this is just based on watching one practice of OTAs. But to me, he looks like a different guy. Braden Willis. I think this guy, like the two tight ends that they drafted last year, Latu may have something, but I think he spent the whole year rehabbing. So I don't see how he could really improve, as opposed to Willis, who's been working, developing the whole year. He played a little bit. He looks like you could really see all the work he's done the last year. And now, like, the depth chart is Kittle and then Eric Sobert and him, Willis. And I think right now, Willis would be the number two tight end. If Kittle goes down, I think he'd be the starting tight end. Like, if he went down for a game. And if Juszczyk went down, I think he'd be the starting fullback for a game. And I think you can do a lot with him. I think he can block. You can put him in motion. He can do, like, that cheat motion that you see the Dolphins do and the Niners do. And he can beat man-to-man coverage. I don't know how good of a blocker he's going to be. He's smaller than Kittle. But it seems like he's gotten a lot stronger than last year. So I'm looking for big things. But when I say big things, he's not going to have a big role in the offense. But I think he could be a starter if someone goes down.
To me, he was always the Juszczyk replacement. He was the guy that I learned. As soon as they drafted him, like, his frame tells me he's not here to play just full tight end. He's the Juice replacement. Now, obviously, they kept Juice this year, and maybe that was because they're just not sure with him and they want to see it for another year. But sounds like he's coming out ready to go. I'll throw another name in the hat. What about Beal? I mean, he's got the path. Drake Jackson isn't, who knows what's still going hurt on with him.
Still hurt.
Can't get on the field. They need somebody to be a pass rusher and be that third guy up, and maybe he can be that player as well.
Yeah, because it looks like Gross Matos is going to be more of an interior pass rusher.
Mm-hmm. I have one more guy, okay, too, that I think
could
emerge. Darrell Luter Jr. I think that Darrell Luter Jr. is somebody that's kind of been sitting in the back, and honestly, he may have gotten brought on the team for a different skill set that we don't use anymore. And now he may be the odd man out. They probably were using a bigger corner at the time. And I feel like Darrell Luter Jr., when I see him on the field, first of all, he looks great in his pads. All right, that's one. I know that doesn't mean anything, but he looks the part. That's number one. Number two, and most guys that look the part, that's kind of like where they lean. Like, I remember one of the biggest things about looking at Embry, no shade to Embry, but he just looked weird in his pads. It was just like, bro, I don't get this, right? Yeah. So still does. It still does, right? One thing about Darrell Luter Jr. is that I feel like he's very good on a special team, so he's always has a role on this team. He's a bigger, longer, faster corner that we need. Most of the guys that we have are not his size, right? We always are going to need a bigger corner that can run. And that's my last thing, is that my biggest thing with him is that if he can run, because he had those injuries on his legs, he had those hamstring injuries, if Darrell Luter Jr. can run, I think that we got ourselves a kind of replacement in letting Mooney Ward walk, where I could see the Niners saying, well, we really just need one press man guy, you know, who can really get a big press man corner. And, you know, we have that here. So I think Darrell Luter Jr. is somebody that can step on too. And then, you know, also Jair Brown.
Good call. I think we all expect Jair Brown. I think he almost asserted himself in that Super Bowl. And before then, who were you just talking about? I wanted to say one more thing about
Darrell Luter Jr. Luter.
Oh, yeah. So talk about players in their last year on the team, most likely. Charvarius Ward. He's that bigger press corner. I don't really think Renardo Green is built to replace. If there's anyone who's built like Charvarius Ward on this team, it's Luter. So that'd be very interesting to see if he can assert himself, because just watching that one practice, it's like, Ambry, it's year three. Is it year three? Or is it year four for him?
It's year four.
He is the worst practice player I've ever seen. It's incredible. Like,
I don't be understanding it.
Every single time, this was like fight a literal back game. Dude, this was a literal game that we played last year at training camp. We got like 2-3 days in, and every time he was on the field, look at each other and say, slant. Ambry Thomas on the field is going to be a slant completion to whatever receiver he was guarding. It was money in the bank every single time. Every time.
He was just watching, too. I just don't understand. And then he gets in games and, like, actually can make some plays, which I don't understand. He's way better in games than he is in practice, in the sense that he doesn't really practice. He observes. Sorry, Ambry. Yeah. Okay, let's do some sleeper picks. Tonight's game, Indianapolis. I'm such a football guy. Indiana and Boston. I watched game one. I thought Indiana was going to win. They tricked it off. That would have been a big one for them. Now they're down 0-1 on the road. Boston. Did Halliburton go to college with Brock Purdy?
I think they went to Iowa State together.
That's cool. All right, let's start with Halliburton. Point guard. You want to do points or assists for Halliburton? Let's do assists since he's the Brock Purdy of this game. 8.5 assists for Halliburton. He had 10 last game. 8.5?
I'm going less.
He's a system point guard.
He's a system point guard. Yeah, I was going to say doesn't have the arm strength really to get it done.
He doesn't have the athleticism. I'm sorry. The stature. Drew Holiday went to college with me. We didn't know each other. He's 2 years younger than me. So let's do Drew Holiday. 14.5 points for the best. He had 28 points in the last game. Damn, he's so good. He's the best defender at the point of attack. He's in his 30s. He's 33. Damn, we're old.
I want to go more, but 96% is going more. I just feel like it's a recipe.
There's no way he's going to have two big scoring games in a row. It's not who he is. Yeah, I like to go against him too.
Yeah, let's go.
Just to be safe. Okay, Tatum. Tatum, 29.5 points for the next coming of Kobe.
No way. Not again.
Coach, what's your opinion on Tatum in this game?
I think that Tatum is average. It's like, no, he's going to do good. I think that's an over. I would take the 29.5.
You would take it? Okay. Well, yeah. Jesse wouldn't.
Yeah.
Well, in your face. Okay. I'm going to go with Coach on this one because you're with Jesse on the other one. Last one. Mm-hmm. Miles Turner. I like Miles Turner. I think he's really good. That's my assessment of Miles Turner. 16.5 points for Miles.
No.
No. Absolutely not. All right.
I don't like it. Under.
All right, let's get one from Friday's game just for fun. Kyrie, 22.5 points. He went for 30 last game. He's in fuego.
I feel less.
I'm going more.
Why?
Because he's really, to me, he's been picking and choosing. Well, yeah, he's just been picking and choosing his spots. He'll break out one game, he won't the next. They won game one, which means they're probably not going to win game two. And I think that he'll probably struggle a little bit in the point category. Plus 97% is taking more, which means it's probably going to be less.
Okay, cool. And let's just see. Have I won one recently? No. No, I haven't. So this is going to be the one. We'll lock that one in. Again, if you guys want to play, download the app. Use promo code CONE, CONE, to get a deposit match. Up to $100 on your first deposit. Okay, let's talk schematic evolution. And I'm going to do this in a way that doesn't reveal anything for the 49ers. I'm not trying to be a double agent, but I've been at practice. And we've been talking to the coaches. We just talked to all the position coaches. They want to evolve. And I think the evolution that we can expect on offense, I don't want to reveal too much, but I think this should be expected. What was the cool little new feature in the NFL last year on offense that every team kind of wanted to steal?
Wasn't it that pop motion?
Yeah. Kyle called it the cheat motion, where you have someone, and instead of doing the jet sweep where he goes across the formation, he goes the opposite direction, like he's trying to run off the field and use the bathroom. But before he gets to the sideline, they snap the ball and he goes upfield, and Tyreek Hill's really, really good at that. So the Dolphins had that up their sleeve and they unveiled it week one last year, and it was so successful. A bunch of teams installed it on the fly. Well, now I think you're going to see a lot of teams install it all off season because it's successful. And I think you're going to see the Niners do that too. Saw a little bit of it in OTAs yesterday, which is they've showed it before. But I have a feeling it's going to be something they major in a little bit more this year. And I think some of the players they added fit this. What do you think, Coach?
I got a question, though.
Yes.
Was Ricky Purcell running it, or was Crowder, Crowney running it?
Great question. Now, Cowing wasn't out there yesterday. Is he injured? Maybe.
Okay.
I don't want to give away too much and get it in trouble, but no, Pearsall was not running that. Pearsall was playing Ayuk's position yesterday. Pearsall was the X on the line of scrimmage, inside, outside. The guy running a lot of it was Braden Willis, Danny Gray, Ronnie Bell. Yes, absolutely. It's 7-on-7, so yeah. 3-2-by-3. Uh-huh. Or 4-by-1. And mm-hmm. you have someone going in motion at the snap. A lot of times it was Braden Willis. And it wasn't necessarily to get the ball to Willis, but it was sort of like, let's get this guy running to the left and then throw to Debo down the seam on the right. A little bit like window dressing. But you also saw Debo run it to the side, stop in the flat, and then run a slant off of it. So you're going to see all kind of very – I'm going to get in trouble for that. I'm so sorry. I'm just there. They're installing some cheat motion. Every offense in the freaking league is going to do it. That's the new trend. And when you look at Jacob Cowing, 4-3 guy who runs reverses and returns punts and catches screens, like, yeah, they wanted to add a little bit of speed in their offense so they can actually do that, because you can't do that with Jawan. No offense. Right. That's not, he's not, even it's when not Debo does it, no one's really scared.
Mm-mm.
No. What makes it work is the 4-3 speed that the Dolphins have in spades that the Niners are trying to get. And it may keep Danny Gray on the freaking team. He was pretty good at OTAs the other day. He caught 3 passes. He didn't catch it with his chest. All of a sudden, they want more speed in the offense for this reason. Don't write him off.
Now, I will say, with the emergence of all of these receivers, Danny Gray, Tay Martin, all of these guys, Ronnie Bell, Chris Conley's gone. Is he gone?
He's still here. He was not at the practice. I think he must be, I don't know.
But all of these low-hanging fruit receivers in the wide receiver room, they got to all be feeling a certain way. They really have to be, with the fact that the Niners are transitioning to what it seems to be like more of a pick-and-pop offense, where they're trying to get the ball out fast. They're trying to stretch the line of scrimmage immediately. They want to get to the weakest parts of the defense as fast as possible with the strongest and fastest players that they have. And they can't just do it with Debo anymore. There just can't be quick screens and tunnel screens anymore. They're going to need real speed getting the ball. I think Rashee Rice is probably what has woken up the Niners and understanding what instant offense you can have when you have somebody that can get out, catch the ball, and get the ball behind the line of scrimmage. But you just need more of one guy. It can't just be Debo. You need practitioners that can get it done across the line of scrimmage. So I do see that with the Niners. I will say that it does breed competition, to kind of tie back to what I started this with, that you got to probably – I would be – if I'm Ronnie Bell and I'm sitting in the draft, like, hanging out over Chris Conley's house, and I see these two guys get drafted, I'm looking at my guy like, training camp's going to be interesting this year, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They're trying to move on without us. So I do see them moving towards it. And just to tie it all together, if you don't think that they're moving on, then why has Christian McCaffrey won his money?
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be a whole different offense. Go ahead.
I also wonder, at what point does Jennings become expendable? And he's somebody that I brought up during draft time. I was like, everybody's talking about Debo and Ayuk and who's going to get traded and all these other things. To me, it was like Jennings is the guy that, as they get closer to training camp or in training camp, they're like, listen, if Danny Gray can emerge or one of these other guys, you know they're going to keep the rookies. They just brought in Bell last year. So if him or Danny Gray can really, really step it up and earn a spot on this team, I know Jennings is a team favorite. But if you can get a late round pick for him, for a guy that's probably not going to be here past this year, maybe he can go somewhere else and get a 2 or 3 year deal and get that extension he's looking for. I think he might become expendable, but it's going to mean that somebody else has to step it up. Somebody that you just don't want to get rid of. And maybe Danny Gray can be that guy, or Bell, or whoever. But, I just think I would look out for that. Jennings may, or he may not be on this team. He may not make this team. He'll make it by being a good player, but he may not make it by the way of, hey, we've got other guys, let's trade him.
If the Niners want to make their drop back passing game more like Miami's with this cheat motion, which I think a lot of the Kyle Shanahan scheme guys are going to want to do, And they want to make Brandon Ayuk one of the highest paid wide receivers in the league and keep him around for a long time. Well, then he's not really that kind of a guy. Like, you're not putting Brandon Ayuk in cheat motion before the snap. I think you just put him on the line of scrimmage and let him go to work. That means the other guys are going to need that skill set. And I think Pearsall can do it. And not only can he do it, needs to do it. Because is he really going to make a living playing X in the NFL and beating press coverage? Like, he could do it in OTAs when they can't press you, but in actual games, is he going to do that? Or is he going to be in the slot, off the line of scrimmage, in motion? I think that's more likely. Same with Cowing. And that makes sense to sort of complement Brandon Ayuk with a bunch of sort of guys who were faster than him, guys who were maybe more dangerous after the catch than him, on a screen than him, while he is the number one target, the guy who beats man-to-man coverage.
Well, and I think with Jennings, I mean, if you're looking to replace Jennings, you may not do it at the receiver position, but if you're looking for a guy that can get past the sticks and be sure-handed, maybe Willis can fill that role. Maybe the unrestricted free agent tight end, who's big body guy, can fill that role. Yeah. You know, Pearsall can fill that role a little bit. So I don't know. I just think that there's multiple ways and multiple different types of players that can fill the role of 19 catches a year.
When you put it that way, that's a good point. Jewish guy says, how about a top crossbar for the field goal? I just like, yeah, that's cool. Like a square. Devin Smith is my three favorite content characters altogether. Yeah, we are characters. I'll take that, Devin. Thank you very much. Let's keep talking evolution. The defense is evolving too. And I think it's interesting. I don't feel like that's Nick Sorensen's area. They elevated Nick Sorensen because he's been here. He's a holdover. He was part of Steve Wilks' staff. He knows the players. He was a player. He has a certain level of authenticity. But they also want to do things differently because their defense was a disappointment last year, partially schematically. And that's where Brandon Staley comes in. He spoke yesterday, and he really talked holistically about how things can change. And he was talking about how offenses, pretty much all offenses in the NFL now, have a can call. And I don't know how many journalists understood what he was talking about, but that means it's what the Niners do. They go up to the line of scrimmage with two plays. Mm-hmm. And if you show them the defense, if the defense shows the offense what coverage they're in, hey, it's single high and it's man. Hey, it's single high and it's zone. Like, the offense is going to get into a play that attacks that specific coverage, and you're going to be at a disadvantage. And I think what we saw last year is that the Niners weren't disguising their coverages. And against good teams like the Bengals, they got shredded when they were really a good defense. And so I think one thing the Niners are going to try to do this year, which, I mean, the Texans do it with DeMeco, the Jets do it with Robert Saleh, disguise their coverages. I think that's going to be a big thing of what they're trying to do this year.
I agree. I'm sorry. I didn't want to take this over.
Go ahead.
But I agree. One of the things, I mean, and it's a copycat league, right, guys? Like, one of the things that hurt us before is that we hurt ourselves with Cleveland. Cleveland disguised blitzes and disguised coverages against us. They were very good at the point of attack. And then we saw problems with Minnesota. They disguised defenses against us. Then we tied it together, and what really killed us is when we saw Baltimore. They disguised defenses and pressures against us, and they married it with simulated pressures. That's when it started really becoming key that you could really become a problem with our offense if you're able to hide and disguise what your predetermined calls are. So I think that Brandon Staley is also brought in here because, you know, if you think about it, everybody that's brought in here is brought in with a certain use case of what can you bring to us that we don't already have, right? And one thing that we haven't had where we were kind of on the outside looking in from a defensive perspective is that we're very vanilla. And we got away with being very vanilla because we had the dogs across the board, right? Where not the average NFL team is going to be able to line up 11 that you can all start, that are all good guys, that are viable players. Now, schematics starts to play in. We're starting to bend the knee a little bit on this. All we do is run palms coverage. We're a cover three defense. And it's just like, nah, bro, we need to start understanding how to ingratiate ourselves with the rest of the league. So I agree with it. And I'm here to see what Brandon Staley can do moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, Grant, where, but we've done it with the Seattle Seahawks and how vanilla they were. And when you put your players in a position where the offense knows exactly what's coming pre-snap, you're putting your defense at a major disadvantage. It doesn't matter how good the players are. If the offense knows exactly what's coming, knows the rules and responsibilities, and can attack that, especially a guy like Kyle Shanahan, who started out as a defensive guy, he knows exactly what the rules are for each coverage, and he attacks those rules. And that's why, that's how you see things show up on these films where it's like, hey, you know, he's going to the ref and he's like, George is going to get held here. This is going to happen. Yeah. It's because he knows how to attack those roles and responsibilities of the defense. And so this goes for the San Francisco 49ers as well. If they can disguise better, if they can show you something to get you to can and go out of a play and kind of give you exactly what it is that you want to see and then change that post-snap, that's always a good thing. Now, there are veteran quarterbacks like a Matthew Stafford or like a Patrick Mahomes, some of these guys that it really doesn't matter what you do, they're going to figure it out in a millisecond and they're gonna wreck you for it. There's nothing you can do to disguise anything, but there are players like Geno Smith or Tua or some of these guys that are kind of mediocre guys that if you can get them to hold for just an extra split second, that's the difference in getting a big play interception or getting a sack or something like that. So yes, I love the fact that they want to disguise the coverages, and it probably does have to come from Staley, who's more of a defensive wizard and has done this for a while, and he's here to help this defense grow and change on the fly.
I disagree with you on one point. I feel like you can get away with being vanilla on defense if you have really good players against mediocre quarterbacks. But once you face the really good ones, like Joe Burrow, if you're just showing what you're going to, it doesn't matter how many good players you have. You're not even contesting passes. You're getting shredded. And I feel like I talked about this with Sal at the owners meetings. They started doing this in 2020. In 2020, he would only show two high safeties before the snap, no matter what the call was. And they would rotate after the snap. DeMeco did that too. Steve Wilks comes in here and it's like, if it's cover three, it's cover three before the snap. If it's cover two, it's cover two before the snap. If it's cover four, it's cover four. It's like, why did you do that? And it's not a high level. It's not what Sala and DeMeco installed. And I think it's not what they're going to do this year. So that should mean an improved defense. There's one more thing there's one more way the defense should evolve. The Niners have been really led by their pass rush for years. They invest so much in it. But last year, they ranked 20th in sack percentage, 20th out of 32 teams. It was below 7%. And yes, they got rid of Chase Young and they brought in Leonard Floyd. But I think more than just swapping out a couple D linemen, I think they're going to look to evolve their pass rush from being a four defensive linemen, straightforward, go get the quarterback rush, to we have seven potential threats to rush the quarterback on any given play. And yeah, it's probably only going to be four, but you don't necessarily know which four are going to come. And that's why they signed a player like Leonard Floyd, who has tons of experience dropping into coverage. I mean, the Ravens drop their nose tackle into coverage sometimes just to be tricky. So I think we're going to see a more exotic. The Niners used to be so of how vanilla their pass rush is. I don't think they're going to do that this year. I think that should also help the defense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There was definitely something off with last year's defense. But one thing we noticed about Shanahan, the reason the wide nine is in place is because Shanahan says, this is what gives my offense trouble. So I want to install what gives my offense problems. Well, I think last year you saw a shift, and what gave his offense problems was press man and simulated pressures. It gave him a ton of problems. You saw it with Cleveland. You saw it with Baltimore. You saw it with the Chiefs. And teams are going to implement that more and more. And so it's interesting because we look at the 49ers and we say, all right, well, your defense has been basically the same. What's going to change with the new defensive coordinator? I don't know that a lot's going to change with the new defensive coordinator, but it will change with Kyle Shanahan if he feels like there's something new in the league that is worth evolving to, because it gives his offense problems. And I think he's looking at it last year going, man, three games, three losses. This gave my team fits offensively. We had no idea what, even the Vikings did it a little bit and gave them problems. Really, the Vikings were a team that would bring everybody to the line of scrimmage and rush everybody at times and drop people back. And really, they gave the 49ers a lot of problems as well. That was a fourth game that they lost, and there wasn't a lot of talent on that defense. So he's probably looking at it and saying, okay, this gives my offense problems. Now it's time to implement that. And that's when you're really going to see change with the defense. It has nothing to do with Wilkes or Sorensen or anybody. It's when Kyle wants to make the change. And I think he's ready to make that change, knowing that it gives his offense problems.
Real quick, for people watching that don't know what simulated pressure is, the idea is instead of just a blitz where you bring a fifth guy, you rush four, but it's unclear which four are going to rush. You might drop a D lineman. You might rush a nickel back. And the idea is you got Leonard Floyd on one side. Maybe you're trying to get the defense to slide to him. Then you drop him into coverage and bring a DB off the other side who's completely unblocked. You're trying to create situations like that, which the Chiefs did so successfully against the 49ers in the Super Bowl.
The Ravens, I think the Ravens showed it, though. The Ravens showed it could be done. And they showed, not only did they show it could be done, but there's a difference from having success versus a team and then the team also showing that they haven't worked on it at all, right? And that's what I mean, where the coaching kind of got challenged in different ways, where we give this team so much credit for the veteran leadership and for the things that they know how to do and what they're used to being able to come up against in different endeavors during the season. But those are the moments that stick out to me, where it's like, all right, you got caught with your pants down with a version of football that you have not seen, nor are you not prepared for. Let's see you really work on that now. That's being a professional, being able to call on your skills at will to be able to button something up and handle it, right? When's the last time we've been through a season where it's like, man, Niners are having a hard time with being able to show up that run defense. What are they going to do to fix it? Outside of going to go get more guys, nothing. Right? There's nobody gets coached up more. Like, I recall versions of our team where, remember when we had a really big issue with getting turnovers? Then all of a sudden, you started reporting tons of turnover drills, guys punching balls out, ripping balls out, and then we would literally see that teaching point being put out in real life on the field. Like, I feel like that's, we haven't seen that in a while.
Real quick, with simulated pressure, the reason it's so in vogue right now and why people want it is, like, when it works, like in the Super Bowl with the Chiefs, you're rushing four, maybe five, but what you're trying to generate is a free rusher. A free rusher is an unblocked rusher, completely unblocked. Mm-hmm. How many times did Steve Wilkes and the 49ers defensive brain trust last year generate a free rusher?
Not many.
Think about it. You watched every game. How many times it happened? I can't think of one.
Unless it was a deliberate bust, not many times at all.
Not many times. So, yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily going to be something the Niners do all the time, but if they do it well, it can only improve their team. Obviously, playing tighter coverage on the outside will give the pass rushers more time to do their job, but having some changeups beyond everyone just beat the guy in front of them, I mean, that's the Niners pass rush. Beat the guy in front of you. Okay.
Well, I think that's why Leonard Floyd's here too, because he can rush out of a 2 or 3 point stance. That's something the 49ers haven't done traditionally. They're usually four guys down, hands in the ground. Well, Leonard Floyd may be here to stand up and help sell that simulated pressure, because maybe he drops back, maybe they send him. And really, actually, you know where this started? It actually started the year prior with the Philadelphia Eagles. And they would stand up both of their edges, and you never knew where it was coming from. That's where it started. It was just 2 years ago. Arizona then tried to implement that, but they didn't have the players. So the Eagles were actually the first team that I saw doing this on a regular basis.
You know who actually was doing it 10 years ago?
Fangio. More than 10 years
ago? Yes. Fangio. And you know who's a Fangio disciple?
Yep.
Daily.
Yep.
So what's one of the nice things about having edge rushers who are in a 2-point stance standing up as opposed to a 3-point stance, it's easier to do stunts and games. And that's a big part of the Vic Fangio pass rush. Fangio, 13, 14 years ago, was not trying to rush five, but he was trying to find the most creative ways to rush four. And I don't think the Niners have been at the forefront of creativity when it comes to their four-man pass rush, but they could be now.
Because they had the dogs before they just they had them.
Go ahead. But to Salah's credit and to D'Amico's credit, they would just let those guys do their thing on first and second down. But on third down, both D'Amico and Salah were very, very creative and exotic with the kind of pressures that they could scheme up and the kind of free rushes they could generate. I didn't see that from Steve Wilks, and which was weird because I felt like in his past he had been a big blitzing guy, but his background is DBs. Maybe he just doesn't have that expertise. I don't know. Maybe Staley does. We'll see. We got one more topic. Week one. It's not that far away. And most Niner analysts and fans, people, have the Niners winning that game. I think they're 5.5-point favorites. They should win that game. But it's an interesting matchup. The Jets have a legit top 3-5 defense. I mean, it's stacked at all three levels. They can play man coverage. They can do simulated pressure. They can do whatever. And they have a Hall of Fame quarterback who may or may not still be great. And they have a really, really good running back. And they have three good wide receivers. Their offensive line is a question mark, just like the Niners. What are you guys expecting to see in that matchup? And how likely is it that the Niners lose it?
Man, I think it's very likely that the Niners lose this game. Feeling teams out. See, this is, and the reason why is I really don't think that, obviously, there's the talent element of the game, right? Where who's better, who's worse, what defense is better, and all that other stuff. But we don't start fast. Like, it was just last year that the biggest thing that we were talking about was everybody being able to start week one, healthy, being able to understand that we can't let any game slip away and that we need to be able to play against teams early because we need to be able to be fighting for the number one seed. That's kind of like our you know, track of how we've been going through things. And also, one thing that we need to see is it's possible that we lose this game, but what really is going to tip the scales for me is how do we have a camp? We have light camps. And now with our core being a little bit older, I'm wondering if we really have a strenuous camp where these guys are really amped up to play week one. How do we look throughout preseason? So we're playing against a younger team. We are now one of the oldest teams in the league. That's a fact, right? Especially by the core. And we're playing a team where they've got a lot to prove. I kind of stepped on all of like the teased points. Grant smacked me down. I admit, yes. Really? Early on. No, but what I'm saying is that that's facts though. Like all of the optics play, they have every reason in the world to be a spoiler, right? They have every reason in the world for Robert Saleh not to get sunned in here coming back. It's like, you know, Robert, it's been good what you've been doing over there in New York, and you've been snatching our players and you've been copying our offense and you stood in the way of Aaron Rodgers and all of that is good. But we'll see you next year for the interview of our defensive coordinator job. So they know the narrative of how we look at them. And I feel as though that, like I said, the real matchup for me is going to be this defense against our offense. I want to see, because I do believe that what makes these, what the reason why we're having this discussion is because throughout Robert Saleh's entire tenure, it's been the defense that's been stellar. So.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, every time the Niners face a defense like the one the Jets have, they scored 19 points. Every time. You know what defense gave up the fewest yards per play last year in the league? The Jets, 4.6. Okay, go ahead.
And well, that was with a quarterback that couldn't keep the defense off the field, right? Mm-hmm. They were constantly with their backs against the wall. I mean, you can go look at it, and sure, you'll look at like Miami put up a bunch of points against them, but if you really watch the flow of that game, that was a Zach Wilson problem. That wasn't a Jets defense problem. You know, the thing that's interesting about the Jets is if you go player by player, they have tons of name recognition. I just don't know if I'm buying their brand. They're kind of throwing together this hodgepodge of players that, again, are really big names and can be really good. But also, I don't know if they're going to make it through the year healthy. I don't know what Aaron Rodgers is or is not coming off the injury. Saleh's fighting for his career as a head coach and staying there with the Jets. There's a lot on the line for this team. So that team has a lot to play for. I just don't know if week one, as long as the 49ers are dialed in, They know exactly what to expect from a season, how to win when it matters most and a game gets close. I would expect that the 49ers win that game, but can they be beat? Absolutely. And what I will say is Robert Saleh does have an advantage from the standpoint that, yes, he knows the Shanahan offense, but he's been facing McDaniel twice a year. And if you're talking about a new install with this cheap motion or whatever you want to call it, he saw it with Miami last year. He's a year ahead of the curve. So it's not like the 49ers are going to come out and he's going to go, oh my gosh, how am I going to stop it? Oh, we'll just do what we did against Miami, who has Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle, who are much better than the players that you can throw into a cheap motion out here. We're going to be good. So I do find that aspect very interesting. I'm not saying it's a for sure win. I just don't know if I'm personally buying the Jets brand. I think a good season for them, they finish at 10 wins. I think most people are looking at that roster and saying, oh, that's a playoff team. I don't know if that's necessarily the case with them.
The Jets are kind of a conundrum. Do you remember what they did to the Texans last year off the top?
I don't.
They beat the Texans 30-6.
Okay.
What they did to C.J. Stroud, C.J. Stroud in that game, this was like midway through the season, maybe almost, I don't know, this is November.
That was his three-pick game, I assume?
No. He was 10 for 23 for 91 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, four sacks, got hurt, left the game. Davis Mills came in. They just beat the crap out of him. It's a really good defense.
And I know the Hassan Reddick now too.
Than that team, but yeah, they have Hassan Reddick now too. That's true.
Yeah.
He's and Javon Kinlaw, watch out. Had to say it.
You talking tough.
Solomon Thomas too.
Always been his biggest supporter. Watch out. No, but for real, like they're going to be able to put Quinnen Williams and Hassan Reddick right on the Niner, on the right side of the Niners offensive line. Like they're not playing around. They know what it takes. They have corners who can play press man coverage across the board. It's going to be a hell of a game, and it might be low scoring. And to me, what this comes down to is offensive coordinator Aaron Rodgers. Are you going to run the ball? Because if you do, you just might win. If you don't, you just might get hurt, man. I don't know. What is Aaron Rodgers going to do? Because I don't think Nathaniel Hackett has that much of a say over there. I wonder.
No, Breece Hall is a very good running back. And then they drafted another one. So, I mean, I think they'll be able to run the ball if that's what they decide they want to do. Sauce Gardner versus Ayuk is an interesting matchup. Sauce Gardner is a young up-and-comer. He's going to be in the hip pocket of Ayuk all day long. You know, what does it look like for Brandon Ayuk? Can he break free of press? So that's going to be an interesting play coming off the Super Bowl where the 49ers struggled with press man. Well, you know what you're going to get from Sauce in those corners. So have you figured out in one offseason how to beat it and keep the rhythm and timing of this offense going? I don't know. We'll find that out early week one. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's going to be a good game. Like I said, this defense is game ready. And our offense trying to transition into more of a pass trajectory, getting past the run game. It's going to be good to see. I think it's probably going to try to start out as a shootout, and then it's going to get shut down very quickly.
People also forget that the Jets, you know, that week one game where Aaron Rodgers went down last year. Do you remember what that game was? Like who they played and what happened?
It was close.
They beat Buffalo
with Zach Wilson. So like they have some incredible wins on their season from last year. Also some bad losses, which is understandable, which is why this team is so interesting. Like so much pressure on Robert Saleh, so much pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. They got to win this game. Like this is such a statement game for them. This game means more to them than it means to the Niners. So the Niners better be freaking ready at home on their Monday night season opener. Kenny 757 says, what up, fellas? Simply put, hopefully Kyle gets out of his own way and that we become a two-headed monster with Jordan Mason and CMC. Alternate them. Pay BA. It would be cool if Jordan Mason got to play football this year. I think I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. Free Jordan Mason. JR Macias says, dates out on joint practice with the Saints in Irvine.
Not yet.
You could probably guess it.
Yeah.
Whatever that game is, it's going to be like the Wednesday and Thursday before that game. But that's all I got.
It's always like near the end of August.
Why are the practices going to be in Irvine? Niners and Saints in Irvine. Why? Yeah, at UC Irvine? They don't even play football at UC Irvine. Do they have a I don't have a football team at UC Irvine.
It's nothing but business class. It's nothing. Irvine is a big business park. I've been down
there.
Yeah,
it is.
Do you guys know what the mascot is for UC Irvine? No.
A cardinal?
Anteaters.
Wow. The Anteaters.
Nice.
Nice. Nothing against, it's a good school, but it's hard to get super excited about being it. And they have like a, they say Anteaters, zot, zot, zot. That's apparently the sound that Anteaters make. Zot, zot, zot.
Good for them, man. Good for them.
It's a good school. It's a hell of an institution.
Son, you got what it takes to be an Anteater.
I was like, can we go check out UCLA now? Like, this is cool, but I don't really want to be an Anteater. Do you know what the mascot is for UC Santa Cruz?
No.
The snail? I feel like
banana,
it's like
some slug.
Huh?
Banana slug.
Yeah, I remember
close that. Enough. Yeah, close enough.
The banana slug. Who doesn't want to be a banana slug? Actually, I think that's cooler than an Anteater. Like, yeah, I'm a slug. Yeah. That's right.
Banana slug.
Yeah. Not just any slug. Thanks for watching, everyone. I think
not
this was one. I think this was definitely the best coaches meeting after dark of all time. That we've ever
I would say so. The worst. So. It was actually also the worst. That's the unfortunate.
It was
thing.
All of those things.
It was all of those things. We got 1,500 people watching right now because they know 15! A trusted and reputable three-way show when they see one. Mm. Thanks for watching, everyone. I'll be back when you least expect it.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.